This is Monday, February 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, President Trump's travel ban for immigrants from several predominantly Muslim countries is on hold, but the government hopes to change all that. Also ahead, the ban has led to problems not only for the affected immigrants, but for U.S. families hoping to accept them.
I really felt ashamed that that somebody with a stroke of a pen could somehow communicate a value that is so different from what I know to be true about this country.
VOA's Jeff Swicord has that story, and Carol Pearson will be here with a report from VOA's June So on how an affordable automobile can change the lives of many in this country, all in today's International Edition. The White House says it expects the courts to restore President Donald Trump's ban on refugees and travelers from seven predominantly Muslim countries, an executive order founded on a claim of national security. VOA White House correspondent Cindy Sain is with us here in Washington. Cindy, what's the latest? What's the government doing in an effort to reinstate this travel ban?
Well, Ira, this has been a very dramatic legal showdown, almost a Super Bowl showdown here over this ban. Monday is a key day because both sides have to deliver arguments. There's a deadline. This is only a temporary. The judge has temporarily stopped this ban from being implemented so that the 60,000 people who wanted to travel are able to travel. So we're waiting to see what both sides do and whether this Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judge in San Francisco, what happens when the arguments from both sides have been delivered.
Well, the government has told the appeals court that the president alone has the power to decide who can enter or stay in this country, an assertion that appears to invoke a wider battle to come over illegal immigration. That sounds like an issue for the Supreme Court, doesn't it to you?
Yes, it does. And I think no matter who wins or loses late Monday or Tuesday when we get word from this appeals court, the other side will file an appeal.
And then earlier today, nearly 100 companies, two states, and two former U.S. secretaries of state have filed arguments against the temporary ban, supporting the ban on immigration from the seven Muslim countries. But what's that all about? They're all Democrats.
Well,
not about the companies. Yeah.
Right. Not all of them. I mean, there's 97 tech companies, including Google and Microsoft, and they're saying that it affects their states. It affects the people who live in their states' freedom of travel, to do business, to attract very talented people from other countries. They're saying that this is really going to be detrimental to American business and success. One of the things that President Trump strongly ran on, that he wanted to help American workers. And as far as the former Secretaries of State, as you said, we have Democrat John Kerry and Madeleine Albright, but there's also some other Michael Hayden, who's a former CIA director, who've joined in, and they said they're worried about U.S. troops. They're worried that this ban could hurt national security because it insults Iraqis, for example, and U.S. troops are working closely with them on the ground.
And but it should be said now that there are immigrants coming into the country now, and they are being vetted as they have been vetted for a number of years now, right? Sometimes it takes years to get here.
Yes, and that's what refugee groups are saying and immigrants groups are saying. Some would already call the process extreme because, as you said, it can take 18 to 24 months for them to get permission to enter.
VOA's White House correspondent, Cindy Sain. As always, Cindy, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Now, what is happening as far as families that are expecting refugee families to come here to the United States? For churches, other groups planning to sponsor these refugees, the results have been consternation and confusion. Jeff Swicord visited members of a Maryland church who were expecting an Afghan refugee family to arrive.
So this is the bedroom where the parents will be.
Reverend Heather Kirk Davidoff and her small congregation have been preparing to receive a refugee family since September of last year.
The family has a 14-month-old son who was born while they were refugees.
Recently, they learned they would receive an Afghan family with four children who had fled their homeland. The church began preparing this rented townhouse, thinking the family would arrive before President Trump took action on his promise to limit the influx of refugees.
Everything is here. Every utensil and plate and glass.
Then on January 27th, Trump signed an executive order banning all refugee admissions to the U.S. for 120 days. The family was scheduled to arrive on February 8th.
We also got together and held hands and prayed and cried and began to experience some of the loss that then became real for us on Friday when that executive order was issued.
President Trump said his action is necessary to ensure the security of the United States.
I'm establishing new vetting measures to keep radical Islamic terrorists out of the United States of America. We don't want them here. We want to ensure that we are not admitting into our country the very threats our soldiers are fighting overseas.
News of the refugee ban was devastating to the congregation of Kitimakundi Community Church in Columbia, Maryland. Church member Don Link came up with the original idea to sponsor a refugee family.
I was heartbroken. Like our pastor said, this family is part of our family now. So it's just like our family that was coming to live with us.
Rebecca Dietz is in charge of the welcoming committee.
Sick, devastated. Couldn't imagine what they must be feeling like to have gotten so close to their next move in a long journey.
Kirk Davidoff also is concerned about the message the refugee ban sends to the rest of the world.
I really felt ashamed. I really felt ashamed that that somebody with a stroke of a pen could somehow communicate a value that is so different from what I know to be true about this country.
The church still holds out hope that one day the family will be allowed in this country. If not, the members of the Kitimakundi Church have vowed to sponsor another refugee family. For now, all they have is an empty dining room table, a vase full of flowers, and a card that welcomes a family they may never know. Okay. Jeff Swikord, VOA News, Columbia, Maryland.
Time now to head to Doug Bernard, who's here looking at social media. That's what he's been doing all weekend long. Doug has no life over the weekend. He just looks at social media.
Constantly.
But, I mean, this travel ban has to be way up there with the Super Bowl.
The travel ban is way up there. Tom Brady is certainly hitting new heights, both in his career and on social media. However, what seems to have grabbed people's attention most recently is a tweet that President Trump sent out a little bit earlier today, maybe about 8 o'clock or so. And he wrote this, quote, any negative polls are fake news, just like the CNN, ABC, NBC polls in the election. Sorry, people want border security and extreme vetting. So what he's saying here is not, I disagree with this or that. This, of course, Mr. Trump is getting ready for a televised interview tonight with Fox News. But I think what people are responding to here is the word any negative polls are fake news.
Anybody who disagrees with me is wrong.
Well, so now even some of his supporters here, I'm looking at, so this hashtag negative news or hashtag fake news. Here's one at Heaven Above, 57 Heaven Above. He writes, Mr. POTUS, I voted for you. I stand behind you, sir. But please stop worrying about fake news or polls and spend more time on making America great again. Bill Mitchell has this to write, no matter what the media does or says, Trump train will keep doing what it did in the election, why it works. But a lot of people are just really not having any of it. Upcoming Democratic star Joaquin Castro, one of the two Castro twins, he writes simply, this is bizarre behavior. Something is not right. And his views are being shared by a lot of people out there. So once again, President Trump's Twitter is getting people talking.
Yeah, that it is in many ways. Doug Bernard, and of course, the Super Bowl was great.
I mean,
if you're not a football fan, American football, I'm sorry, because this was one of the great games
and
ever played.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but Tom Brady, yes, probably the greatest NFL quarterback in the Super Bowl era.
That comes from Doug Bernard, but I have to, yeah, I know. That's, you know, it's the American thing. You don't support people who win all the time in
That's
sports.
Exactly right.
All right. This is VOA. Among the top stories we're covering, the White House is hoping it can get a court to lift a hold on President Trump's travel ban. A delegation of experts from Russia, Turkey, Iran, and the United Nations is meeting in Kazakhstan's capital to discuss the ceasefire agreement in Syria. The UN recorded an alarming 24% spike in conflict-related child casualties in Afghanistan. And the New England Patriots won the first overtime Super Bowl game in U.S. National Football League history, coming back from a 25-point deficit to beat the Atlanta Falcons 24-28 in Super Bowl 51. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's Dawn spacecraft discovered a cryovolcano or ice volcano on the dwarf planet Ceres back in 2015. Called Ahuna Mons, scientists say that it appears to be the only mountain on the dwarf planet. A new study led by researchers at the University of Arizona proposes that Ahuna Mons may have also had a number of siblings millions or billions of years ago, but have since flattened and blended into the landscape. The study proposes that a method called viscous relaxation is responsible. With this process, just about any solid will eventually flow and flatten with enough time. Since the Ceres volcano contains ice, the researchers think the idea of viscous relaxation wearing down the sibling mountains is possible. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition from VOA. U.S. President Donald Trump, in remarks during an interview with Bill O'Reilly of Fox News aired yesterday, was asked if he respected Russia's leader, Vladimir Putin.
I do respect him.
Do you? Why?
Well, I respect a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get along with him. He's a leader of his country. I say it's better to get along with Russia than not. And if Russia helps us in the fight against ISIS, which is a major fight, and Islamic terrorism all over the world,
right,
major fight, that's a good thing. Will I get along with them? I have no idea.
Now, responding to a statement by O'Reilly that Putin is a killer, the president said the U.S. is not so innocent and referenced the war in Iraq, saying he opposed it from the beginning. Senate leader Mitch McConnell reacted by saying he doesn't think there is any equivalency with the way the Russians conduct themselves and the way the United States does. Amy Klobuchar is a Democratic senator from Minnesota.
You cannot compare any leaders in our country to what Vladimir Putin has done. This is a man and a regime that has taken down a passenger plane in Ukraine, killing hundreds of people. This is a regime that has been known to poison human rights activists. This is a regime that we believe 17 intelligence agencies in our own country have said has tried to influence our own election.
University of Denver Russian watcher and international affairs professor Jonathan Edelman told VOA's Victor Beatty it would be good to cooperate with Moscow on defeating the Islamic State.
But take Syria, for example. The Russians are not going to negotiate. They have won an outstanding victory. They've come back from being absolutely considered a third-rate state after the disintegration of the Soviet Union in 1991. And now they've won this major victory together with what they've won in left bank Ukraine and what they won in Crimea and what they won in Georgia and South Ossetia and Abkhazia. So it seems very unlikely, and we can see it in their behavior in the last couple of years where they said they were attacking ISIS, but about 80% of the time they were busy attacking pro-Western rebels. So good luck. You know, if you could do that in the world, sure, but what are the odds? If you were sitting there, and I even gave a course in the Russian Foreign Ministry a few years ago. If you're sitting in Moscow, you only want one thing, more. This has been really good under Obama, and if it could continue under Donald Trump, they will say or do whatever is necessary because they want the most important thing, Russia to again become a superpower, even though it's got a very weak economy.
There are some concerns that the Trump administration will seek to lift sanctions on Russia that stem from its 2014 annexation of the Crimea. Vice President Pence on U.S. television Sunday said, "We're watching the events unfold in Ukraine, very troubled by the increased hostilities over the past week." He said, as far as the sanctions are concerned, quote, "I think that's a question that will be answered in the months ahead. It just simply all depends."
The problem is, if you see it from Moscow's point of view, and I've been there a number of times, it doesn't make sense. The question is, what am I, you know, it's the art of the deal from the Russian point of view, which is, okay, now, what else can we get while the getting is good? And especially if the Americans are partly perceived as American firsters, neo-isolationists, going to be retreating, why would we want to give up anything? Right now, we are on a roll, and we're even working with the Iranians, of all people whom they don't like, and the Turks, for victory in Syria and a victory in Ukraine. We see it from our point of view. So I think it's possible, but to tell you the truth, I think it is very unlikely.
Jonathan Adelman said the best policy toward Russia is to negotiate, but be very careful and take what they say with some extra caution. The French presidential race is in full swing, with candidates officially launching their campaigns over this past weekend. More from VOA's Laetitia Hook.
Jean-Luc Mélenchon, leader of the movement Unsubmissive France, launched his presidential campaign Sunday at a rally in Lyon. But at the same time, he addressed voters at another rally in Paris via a 3D hologram.
Regardez de près.
Look at this closely. Study and convince those around you. Don't be swayed by beautiful words. Look at what we are doing now, and that is why we need to vote to abolish the French presidential monarchy.
Mélenchon, a former socialist, is running, as he says, outside the frame of political parties. He has positioned himself as a key adversary to far-right candidate Marine Le Pen, who also chose Lyon to launch her campaign Sunday. The leader of the National Front is critical of globalization and Islam.
Those two ideologies want to bring France to its knees. On one hand, the ideology of globalized finance, of commerce only. On the other hand, fundamentalist Islam, the ideology that is all about religion.
Le Pen promises to organize a Brexit-style referendum within 6 months if elected. So far, Mélenchon is not a serious threat to Le Pen's populist platform, but other candidates may be. One is Benoît Hamon, who will represent France's ruling Socialist Party in the April election. After his victory Sunday over former Prime Minister Manuel Valls, Hamon said he will reach out to Mélenchon to form a coalition that might have a better chance of winning the general election. But a new independent candidate may complicate matters for the socialist. Emmanuel Macron, former Minister of Economy and Industry and the founder of a new political movement called En Marche, is running on a centrist platform. He mocked Le Pen at a rally in Lyon Saturday.
Some people pretend to talk for the people, but they are only ventriloquists.
Mais ce ne sont que des ventriloques.
Opinion polls suggest that Le Pen will win the first round vote on April 23rd, but Macron is projected to beat her in the runoff on May 7th. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
In many parts of this country, everyday routines require a car, an automobile. Everything, going to work, taking kids to activities or doctors, running errands, takes longer without one. Sometimes not having wheels can even lead to a lost job. As VOA's June So tells us, one car award program is working to make sure that doesn't happen. Carol Pearson narrates.
We are very excited to have you.
LaTanya Pierce has been waiting for this moment for years. The mother of seven children is finally getting a car.
Thank you. That's all I can say is thank you. Thank you, Lord. Thank you. Thank you so much. It was hard. I was, like, taking the bus. I was catching sedans, taxis, getting my family cars. It was just struggling. That's all. It's a big struggle for me. So this, having this, it's a blessing.
The blessing came through Vehicles for Change, a nonprofit organization that sells cars to low-income families at a minimal cost.
So it's important that you keep an eye on everything.
Okay. For
the Martin Schwartz founded the organization, based outside of Baltimore, Maryland in 1999.
And we take donated cars, mostly from the general public. The ones that are in decent condition, we repair, and then we identify families who need a car to get to and from employment to escape poverty.
The recipients pay about $900 for the car with a 12-month loan.
So they establish credit while they're paying for their car, which is very valuable for them as they get on their feet and look to buy a house or get a credit card or all those kind of things. This has given them an opportunity to establish credit as well as owning a vehicle.
The program works closely with local social service agencies.
In order to get a car from our program, you have to be recommended by a partner agency. So we work with homeless shelters, and we work with job training programs, and we work with domestic violence shelters. And they identify the people who need a car, and then we provide the vehicle.
Congratulations.
Since its launch, Vehicles for Change has awarded 5,700 cars to low-income families. The group's study found that 75% of recipients got better jobs or boosted their earnings by an average of $7,000 within the first year. Pierce, a nursing assistant, expects owning a car will make a big difference in her life.
With my job, I was stuck at a facility. So now if I do private duty, I can get more hours and I can make more money. And I can do different things with my kids, like stay out later. We can go a lot of places that they always wanted to go and enjoy ourselves.
Schwartz hopes to expand the program across the country with a lofty goal of helping as many people as possible climb out of poverty from behind the wheel of their own car. For producer June So, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
That wraps up International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In his inaugural address, President Donald Trump repeated his promise to defeat Islamic terrorism.
We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth.
In a presidential memorandum signed January 28th, President Trump called ISIS among the most vicious and aggressive threats from radical Islamic terrorism faced by the United States. He recalled the beheadings of American citizens James Foley, Stephen Sotloff, and Peter Abdul Rahman Kasik, as well as the death of Kayla Mueller. He pointed to the ISIS-inspired attacks in the United States, the complicity of ISIS in the terrorist attacks in Paris, Brussels, and Berlin, ISIS' systematic campaign of persecution and extermination in those territories it enters or controls. President Trump directed the Secretary of Defense to deliver in 30 days a preliminary draft of a comprehensive plan to defeat the terrorist group. The plan would be developed with the participation of the Secretaries of State, Treasury, and Homeland Security, as well as the Director of National Intelligence, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs, and the Assistant to the President for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism. At a press briefing, White House spokesperson Sean Spicer said the plan must include recommended changes to any United States rules of engagement and other U.S. policy restrictions that exceed the requirements of international law regarding the use of force against ISIS, as well as other measures.
Public diplomacy, information operations, and cyber strategies to isolate and delegitimize ISIS and its radical Islamist ideology. Identification of new coalition partners in the fight against ISIS, and policies to empower coalition partners to fight ISIS and its affiliates. mechanisms to cut off ISIS financial support, including financial transfers, money laundering, oil revenue, human trafficking, the sales of looted art, historical facts, and other revenue sources, and a detailed strategy to robustly fund the plan.
The president's clear objective is to defeat and destroy ISIS, and to do it systematically. This is not only a necessary step for America's national security, Mr. Spicer said, it is also a humanitarian imperative. The United States must take decisive action, and the president is taking the necessary steps.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.